Welcome to Office Hours, and we're seeking the truth today. And it's so easy to do when you have legends like Sharon Lecter right next to me, Jack Canfield, and now to cap it off, you know, I get so much credit for the show being so good. How could it not be good when you bring someone like Jay Abraham on? Right. He is one of also my mentors. I learned more about value in strategic marketing, sales, and business consultancy than any other person. And I'm blessed. He lives right around the block from me, but I have to come to Las Vegas to see him. Welcome, Jay Abraham, to Office Hours.
Thank you, David. What a privilege. And I look forward to contributing in any way that helps. And all you have to do is guide me and tell me the game you want to play today.
The game I want to play today is one that more people, I think, should focus in on, and it's value. When I studied all of the different materials, listened to you, watched you, everything seems to be revolving around your ability to articulate value. And a lot of people don't have a clear indication about value, but two, they don't know how to articulate that quantitative value, especially to exceed what they're asking for. Whether it's marketing, sales, or consultancy, how can we determine value, and what tips do you have for me still in order to articulate that value?
It's a great question. So let's, first of all, before we answer the question, let's answer the wonder drug question, which is, what's the reason why we want to achieve that? Because the reason why we want to achieve it is, if you don't establish superior value relative to the area, the niche, the category, pardon me, that you're marketing in or you're selling to, then basically you have no advantage and you don't really want an equal playing field. You talk about football. In business, I don't think anyone really wants to have no advantage. You want to have every ethical, operative word is ethical, David, advantage you can get. So why would you want to be able to establish superior value? Well, first of all, value is the ultimate weight that moves people to action and decision. And the value has to be in alignment with their definition, not yours. So the first thing you have to do, in my opinion, is see how the markets you are targeting, and there are many different markets you have to interact with, the people who pay you and the people you pay, how do they define and determine value? And what does value mean to them? Because oftentimes what we believe is a great value, they don't, or what we really create, which is affirmative a great value, they don't really discern because they don't know what goes into it. And for either of those reasons, you know, we're missing the mark. So the first thing you have to do is understand what it's like to be on the receiving side of any message, any communication, any interaction you ever make with anyone for any reason, because if your assumption of what they define value as is way off the mark, you're starting at a decisive disadvantage. So I'll stop there for a minute. I hope that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I know my other legend to my right is living in the world of value as well, and probably can share with you some of the same types of strategies, as well as being a great advisor. Sharon.
Jay, it's an absolute honor to be with you today. I'm Sharon Lecter, co-author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and the Rich Dad series. You and I have been in the same world for a long time and haven't connected, so it is an absolute honor to be able to speak to you today. Thank you so much.
Same here.
And one of the, I am a student of yours, and I love your term relational capital, because I teach the power of association, and I can look back through my lifetime when I started children's talking books, that power of association, bringing in Disney, Warner Brothers, Sesame Street, allowed us to build value, we just talked about, but also reach so many more people. And I think in today's world, as we, you know, we built Rich Dad through Warner Books and Time Life, and same thing, that relational, and finding those powers of association. And I truly believe it's even more important today. And one of my most valued associations is David Meltzer sitting next to me. So I believe you are the legend behind relational value, and I'd love for you to share a little bit about how you see the importance of it today.
Sure. Well, why don't I start with an actual true story? And you, I'm not trying to date you or David, but we're old enough to remember Nightingale Conant when they were a hot publisher of audiobooks, and I used to have a lot of collaborations with them. And the person that used to be their president one time said to me, if we took every one of your 97 methodologies and categories of exponential growth and profit increasing away from you, and you can only keep one, what would it be? And I'd say partnership, power partnering, joint ventures, strategic alliances, co-branding, recommended provider status, endorsement, sophisticated strategic networking, because you get to leverage. I'll give you the mindset blow on this. Anybody who's into the investment world knows what AUM means, assets under management. When you are able to ethically access a multitude of other influencers, organizations, platform, media, organizations, discussion group, non-competitors or competitors alike, access to their market, their combined years of building credibility and trust, you are harnessing and leveraging enormous tangible and intangible assets that are now de facto under your management. I'll give you a little example. I was in the seminar business. Both of you probably know that, for not a long time, 5 or so years. And we did $250 million of revenue with seminars and home studies and some related product services. And I invested out of pocket, totally fixed, about $300,000. The rest came from me having relational capital with every newsletter that was important, Success Magazine, Entrepreneur Magazine, the in-flights. I had the number one organizer of business events in Singapore, Malaysia, Tokyo, China, Australia, the UK, all partnering with me. And the power of accessing other people's access and assets is unimaginable. And it is probably the ultimate growth, I guess I would call it, wonder drug. We talk about the fact that we call it the unlimited business checkbook, because most small, medium businesses, guys and girls, they think they have a limitation on their capability to advertise, to market, to have technological skills, to have a talent, to have, if some of them want to have facilities all over the country, continent, world. And it's not a problem at all when you figure that there's always someone else who has access to your audience and has the trust and credibility, or many, many, many someones. You just have to figure out who they are and what it takes to get them to believe in you enough that they are willing to promote, endorse continually, or at least static, offer your product, service, company to their audience in a very unhedged way. And if you do it right, you end up basically almost instantly achieving stature and preeminence and significance on a worldwide basis. That's what happened to me. Nobody knew who I was. I also did the same thing, just parenthetically, with a client of mine early in the investment newsletter world. When that started, I had a gold brokerage company that was doing $300,000, and we got them to $500 million, $500 million in aggregate revenue in 15 months, because every newsletter, every investment seminar company, every author that had a free market bet was our recommending endorser. And we just had everybody telling everybody that we were the only viable solution, the most trusted advisor. We have a book that I have a lot of books I never completed. One of them is called Relevancy Rules, and it's the rules for being relevant. And the easiest way to be relevant is not to pay a lot of money for advertising that is outer periphery of trust and credibility, but to go right to somebody that's worked his or her heart out for years, spent enormous amount of time, effort, capital, you know, delivering enormous value, creating total trust, and getting them to assign that trust to you instantly. We have, and I wish I knew we were going to talk a little bit about this, Sharon and David, because I just did a keynote about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, to Dave Asprey's biohacking audience, and the concept was deal-making, partnering, and we identified 200 and I think 47 different ways that you could use strategic alliances, joint ventures, power partnering, endorsement, in everything from revenue generation to operational efficiency to overhead reduction to fixed type growth and everything in between. And if you like, I'll be happy to send that to you and you guys can put it up or something. I don't really care. And it doesn't drive anybody to, it doesn't say CJ at the end. And we just do things because our market is normally higher performing clients that are very high paying. So we just give content pretty freely away. But I don't know if I'm answering your question or going rogue on you or going.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
Absolutely.
Absolutely brilliant, Jay. Thank you so much.
He's built a community of people that buy from him and sell for him for life. And there's nothing more valuable than that in relationship capital. Melissa, you're building your community and we're blessed to have Jay to help you as well. What question do you have for this legend?
I appreciate that, David. So in this game of life that we do play, when I believe our purpose is to reach our highest self, what do you do and how do you communicate that to others on why? And I would like to particularly know, what is your why behind your push to continue to not only set the standard, but to exceed the standard and become the standard?
Yeah, that's a very complex question. So let me try to unbundle it. So I think the way that you figure out your why is to do some soul searching and say, what really rocks you? I always ask people, and it's a little bit shocking. I say, what do you stand for as a business or as a human being? Who do you stand for? Why do you stand for them? And what does standing for them look like when manifest? And how do you know if, as you're manifesting it, it's being acknowledged and reciprocated? And most people don't have an answer at all. So my particular why, I got started, Melissa, when I was literally 18, got married, had two kids. Nobody cared. I was very lucky. I gravitated to entrepreneurs who didn't give me a salary. They just gave me an eat what you kill percentage of whatever I produced. However, I lucked out because unbeknownst to me then, but in retrospect, they were two kinds of entrepreneurs. One found niches that had not been filled that they passionately wanted to fill for that market. The other saw product service areas that they didn't believe took the value and the contribution as high and as deep and as encompassing. So they were all value creators and people who were really committed to making a profound difference in their market. I got started because I was fortunate enough to understand leverage points that would make the same time, the same effort, the same access to the market, the same amount of capital, human capital, the same ads, the same leads, the same everything produce a lot more yield. And I was very self-selecting, but I didn't realize it, of finding people who I felt had a meaningful sense of value creation. And when I saw people who were dedicating their life, their hopes, their dreams, you know, their 10, 12 hour days and weeks and months and years and decades to a business that they were accepting unbeknownst to them a fraction of the impact, the yield, the output, the income, I wanted very badly to help them reach more people, impact more people, be rewarded for creating more value. So I think you got to figure out, first of all, what rocks you. For me personally, the reason I still do it is nobody ever paid me for salary. They just paid me for results, and they didn't care if I worked 3 minutes or 30 minutes or 30 hours a day. So I always did 3, 4, 5, sometimes 10 different deals at a time. And fortuitously, they were in 10 different industries. And I always find it fascinating. And I have no hobbies. David, I don't know if you really play football. I don't know if that was just a comment. The only my wife thinks I'm crazy. I get up sometimes 7 a.m. to do Israel, and I go to bed at 9 talking to Japan. And I love it. It's very interesting. The entrepreneurial, I'll call it dynamic, is really remarkable. The hopes, the dreams, it's much different than the corporate world. Sure. Because the corporate world, a lot of times the the high ranking people are just moving. They're here for for a year and a half to move to the next job or the next. But the entrepreneur, they hitch their life, theoretically, to this enterprise. And this enterprise is supposed to give them economic security, psychic enrichment, mm-hmm. purpose. Yeah. And a lot of times I don't think today that that's accomplished. So I'm on a mission, still am. I mean, I've been doing it for 50 years and I'm aging myself, but I still get great joy. I still have clients all over the world. I don't sell a lot of products or programs anymore. The only time we do anything is if I want to work through a new thesis. But I love it. And I don't know if that answers you, Melissa, or whether it confuses you.
No, it was great. I will tell you, Jay, believe it or not, I did play college football. And I played tailback. When I got off the bench, the coach said, get your tailback on the bench. You're not going to play today. But I did get to play college somehow. It was the greatest experience. Bobby looks like a football player. I actually did play.
But again, I only look like one. There's a difference. You know? There's a difference. Jay, I love your story, man. This is phenomenal. You know, and it's funny because I do a lot of talking with business owners and, you know, in the same capacity that you do to help find operational expert excellence in their companies to fill the gaps, see what they're doing that's wrong and that they can do better. And one of the big things that I see, and this is a big question for you, because you know, we'll talk to business owners and, you know, they find the value in their market, but they misalign the value with their culture and their mission, you know, so they, you know, or vice versa, they have a culture and mission, but they don't know what the value is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and to me, like I've built all of my companies based on aligning those things, right? You know, starting with integrity and then aligning the culture to the and the mission to the value of where we're going to create a cohesive, you know, a cohesiveness in the business. And I find a lot of business owners, they don't do that, or they don't understand it, or they miss that point. So what do you think is the right strategy to kind of bring that together for them? Because I kind of, to me, I just get it. And to them, there seems to be like this fog over when I talk about it to them.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. It's a fascinating question and integrated commentary. So, I mean, I'm not an original thinker, but I think I'm an original synthesizer, taking much more profound thinkers' bodies of work and integrating them into some hybrids. But somebody told me years ago that you want to always be driven by the three P's: purpose, passion, possibility. But there's a little fly in the ointment. There's a compromise here. You have to be able to make sure that everybody in your organization is on the same mission, the same crusade, the same purpose. And the most important delineator I've seen, and it's pretty interesting to me, is if you think transactionally, you'll never be preeminent. And transactionally means I'm really trying to sell you this cup or the coffee that goes in it. And once you buy it, I've completed my role. Whereas if you think about the fact that this cup allows you every day, depending on how many you have, to have the richest and the most refreshing hot beverage, and that will inspire you or maybe start your day and you'll be that much more productive, effective, calm, whatever it is, and that my coffee, if I'm selling you my coffee, is going to, each and every day, whether it's one cup or five, it's going to aid you in your mission and your journey. When you think transactionally about, not transactionally, transformity of your product or service or people or company deployed in somebody's life on a perpetual way, that changes everything. And I don't know if my answer helps or whether I've gone again rogue on you, because I may not have heard it correctly.
It does, because it makes a lot of sense. It's just a matter of relaying that message to the people that need it, you know? And when you talk about thinking transactionally, you know, one of my favorite sayings to people is, especially business owners, is concentrate on the work. The money will show up. Mm-hmm. They're too focused on the money, you know, which is that transactionally piece, right? And I say, focus on what you're doing. Focus on the work. Keep your head down and the money will show up. And that, and it's hard to get the business owner when you're consulting with them to understand that. They just don't pick up on that at first because all they are is dove into the money. That's all that's important to them.
To transactional to relational. You know, you a transaction, you sell somebody something, you got to go find somebody else to sell to. Mm-hmm. But when you create a relationship with your customers through your culture, through your service, you get a lifetime of sales.
Absolutely.
I think it goes back to Jay's point about being able to communicate that. Mm-hmm. Communication is such a big, powerful tool to be able to transfer your message to somebody and get that across.
I see Jay as the original AI. It's the Abraham intelligence. he synthesizes all the great mentors of the past. And from Nightingale, I know Bob Proctor as well, one of our mentors and friends, talked about the difference in a transaction and a trade, a negotiation compared to the abundance of an infinite loop of value. And I do love the fact and have strived myself not necessarily to be AI like the amazing Jay Abraham, but for me, it's just to put things into context from the Jack Canfields, Sharon Lecters, and Jay Abraham. And that legacy will be carried as they seek the truth and in their explanation. What I love is the humility when the brilliance, I always call genius the expression of God. Mm. And the people that express God the best, they always seem at the end to say, I hope I didn't confuse you. And we appreciate the elevated vibration and frequency that you speak at. And the good thing is we have these great recording of Jay Abraham so that we can review it and even extract more wisdom and faith from the original AI. That's Jay Abraham Intelligence. Thank you, Jay. We know you are not feeling your best today, but always showing up, and our community certainly appreciates it. No wonder you have so many millions of people around the world that absolutely buy from him and sell for him for life.
Thank you very much for acknowledging. Appreciating that. I learned from another mentor years ago, two integrated factors. One, he said, you could lose your money, and if you keep your integrity, somebody will always back you. Mm-hmm. But if you your money and sell out your integrity, you'll never get it back. And the other one, and I always say this, so I might have said it to your group that time I visited you. And the other, which is really the profound one, is you are paid, you are rewarded in life in direct proportion to the quantity, the quality, and the consistency of problems you solve and opportunities you make possible for others. Anyhow, thank you very much. I hope I added value.
Jay, absolutely. No question. Yeah. Thank you so much. We'll have you back, my friend, the amazing Jay Abraham, here on Office Hours.